Good evening. This is KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai Soldotna, listener-supported public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula. I'm Ashlyn O'Hara. Thanks for tuning in. Coming up, Central Emergency Services celebrates a new fire station. But first, members of the Alaska Legislature are asking the State Division of Elections to immediately restore the voter status of thousands of Alaskans that the division deactivated based on outdated information about their citizenship status. A bipartisan group of 23 legislators wrote a letter Tuesday asking the division to put all names back on the active voter list unless their ineligibility to vote has been established. Republican Senate Majority Leader Kathy Geisel and Independent House Speaker Bryce Edgman signed, as did rank-and-file members of the House and Senate bipartisan majorities. Independent Representative Kai Holland of Anchorage says the division's actions seem to dovetail a federal move to discredit the midterm election. Holland says there's not much time to correct the division's mistakes because the Alaska primary is just weeks away.
The timing of this effort by Division of Elections seemed to be, it seemed to be designed in order to try and cause more confusion and to undermine trust.
The division revealed this month that it moved more than 3,000 voters to the inactive list due to questions about their citizenship. Some or all of the voters got driver's licenses before they became citizens, then registered to vote after they became citizens. Elections Director Carol Beecher told legislators at a hearing last week that its actions were in part based on very old data from the Department of Motor Vehicles. As she described it, voters could get back on the voter list by contacting the division and affirming that they are citizens, following the instructions in a letter the division mailed. But some of the voters caught in the purge describe complications. Jeannie McLeod of Anchorage says in 2024, when she became a citizen, she took the opportunity to legally change her first name to the one she's always used, Jeannie. She describes herself as incredibly ticked off to find she's no longer registered to vote under the name that's on her U.S. passport and Alaska ID cards.
Last Thursday, I was mailed a voter's card with the old name. Hello, like I was on the voters list as Jeannie McLeod. Why would they take it off and then reinstate me with a name that is not legally mine?
She says when she went to the Division of Elections office to straighten it out, she was told her polling place won't have her name in time for the August 18th election. She says it feels like the division is trying to discourage people like her from voting. The Division of Elections did not answer specific questions about the legislator's letter, but a spokesman said the division would respond. Evidence of the measles virus was found in Anchorage wastewater in July, according to state epidemiologists. The data is from a national pilot program analyzing wastewater for certain pathogens. Joe McLaughlin is head epidemiologist for the state.
We've got at least one, maybe several people in the Anchorage sewer shed catchment area that had measles around these dates. And we don't know who they were, where they were, or whether transmission was occurring.
The data is from a new pilot program funded by a national nonprofit organization that uses a highly sensitive process to analyze Anchorage's wastewater. City wastewater tested positive for evidence of measles on July 7th, 8th, 9th, and 14th, but the state does not have comparable data yet for dates beyond mid-July. McLaughlin says more data is likely to come in by early August. He says officials don't know yet if the test results are due to a traveler passing through or an Anchorage resident, but clinicians should be vigilant and on the lookout for measles.
Anybody who presents to the urgent care, the emergency department, or in for a routine clinic visit, seeing a child with an acute viral illness that's compatible with measles, they should go ahead and test them and put them in isolation if they think that they do have measles.
The best way to prevent measles transmission is through vaccination, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Typically, children get vaccinated before kindergarten. Symptoms for measles include a rash, high fever, a cough and congestion, tiny white spots in the mouth, and red watery eyes. If you or a family member have symptoms, it's best to call a clinic before getting tested to prevent other patients from being exposed. And finally, 2 years after Cruz broke ground, Central Emergency Services' largest station now has a new home. The community, Kenai Peninsula Borough, and station employees celebrated with a ribbon cutting last week. KDLL toured the new facility. Walking through the front doors of the sparkling Station 1, it looks a little sparse, for now. Natural light shines on a massive blank wall. Roy Browning says that's where the photos will go. He's Central Emergency Services Fire Chief and says they plan to prominently highlight the long road to the organization's first ever custom-built space.
So the display out here in the lobby will be a photo history of the, basically from the volunteer department to a city department and then to a borough department and then adding all the other service areas on that.
The new and old stations are a stone's throw away from one another, and they both function as hub spaces for the agency. But in terms of design, layout, and functionality, the difference is night and day. The old Station 1 was initially built as a community hall in the 1950s. As the central Kenai Peninsula's population grew, so did the demand for emergency services. To keep up with the growth, the station was added onto, and then again, and again. The result was a decades-in-the-making hodgepodge of spaces that CES eventually outgrew. That's how a proposal for a new fire station ended up in front of voters almost 4 years ago. In 2022, ballot proposition number 3 asked service area voters for permission for the borough to incur up to $16.5 million worth of debt to build the new station. To pay off that debt, property taxes would increase. The result was overwhelming, with two-thirds of voters coming down in favor. Here's Browning again.
We're very grateful that they supported, saw the priority that has been placed, you know, on public safety and that, you know, helped us out with the bond and everything in all these years.
Soldotna's Blazy Construction was the low project bidder and built the station for around $18 million. When costs spiked after the bond passed, the Kenai Peninsula Borough Assembly chipped in another $5 million. In many ways, the new station is an upgrade. Firefighters have their own rooms, a dedicated gym means crews no longer work out in the vehicle bay, and a multi-purpose conference room is big enough to accommodate every employee at once. There's also a fireman's pole, the agency's first, and keycard access to storage rooms, as well as a spacious kitchen and even a home theater. Browning says quality of life for agency staff was a big consideration.
Being on 24 and 48-hour shifts, it's just that whole environment when they're not on an emergency call.
But cosmetics are just a perk. Efficiency and functionality are baked into the station design. Browning says the flow of the decontamination area is a good example. From the vehicle bay, firefighters returning from a call can go straight into an adjoining room to clean off their gear and industrial washing machines. Those are next to dryers, which lead into a locker room full of cubbies stuffed with backup gear. In the old station, lockers shared a space with the fire trucks on the bay floor. And Browning says the vehicle bays are bigger too. At the far end, a truck is already hitched with a boat, ready to deploy for a water rescue. The old vehicle bays weren't long enough to park both at the same time. Adjoining rooms include a tool shop and a hose-drying tower with a full staircase that doubles as a drill tower on the outside for ladder training and rope propelling. The perks of the new station won't just be felt in Soldotna, Browning says. That's because Station 1 is a sort of hub for Central Emergency Services' other four stations. Ambulances from other stations, for example, restock at Station 1 between dropping a patient off at the hospital and returning to their home base. The station brings CES administrators to the same building, too, which is where Browning thinks service area residents will benefit greatly.
We designed it for the future, and we're here to take care of it. Having us under one roof definitely is an advantage, or definitely something that makes us be able to just deliver the services better.
There's still some work to be done at the new station. Certain furniture is still en route, and construction workers filed in and out of the building Thursday. But staff were officially moved in by the 4th of July, and Browning says they're ready and waiting for the next call. And that'll be all for tonight's KDLL Evening News. We had help from Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., and from Rachel Cassandra in Anchorage. You can re-listen to this newscast and find our other stories online at kdll.org. I'm Ashlyn O'Hara. Have a great night.
The KDLL Board of Directors meets at 5:30 p.m. the second Thursday of the month at KDLL Studios in the Kenai Peninsula Economic Development District building in Kenai and over Zoom. Meetings are open to the public. If you have an item you'd like to submit for board consideration, email info@kdll.org, or if you're interested in joining the board, call 907-513-1996.
Hey, hey there, Pickle People. This is Murphy with the Veritas Variety Review. Check out Veritas every Saturday from 7 to 9 p.m. We got a rotating cast of players to mix it up for you. Find it here on the only listener-supported public radio station for the Central Kenai Peninsula, KDLL 91.9 FM.